This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstand Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. It's the first Sunday in August. Where did the summer go? I'm glad everybody out there is listening. We have a topic today that should interest everyone. Kids, no kids, because your tax money goes to the school system. And I have two superintendents on from a couple different counties here in the area. We have Dr. Deborah Pettit from Louisa County and Dr. Pam Moran from Albemarle. Ladies, let's do a little voice check. Dr. Pettit, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thank you so much for being here on your husband's birthday.
That's correct.
Does he know that this was his gift to come and watch you talk on the radio?
It was a big surprise for him.
Well, thank you. And Dr. Moran, thank you.
Good morning, Rick. Good to be here with you again.
And now, Dr. Pettit, her first time, and yours, we've been here four or five times now for various topics.
I think that sounds about right, Rick.
And we still talk you into coming back.
Absolutely.
It must be all those secrets I have about you from the closet. So we will be talking about the school systems in general. I mean, we're talking about school systems locally, so certainly some questions about the specifics of Louisa and Albemarle, but there are state issues to talk about. There are budgeting concerns. There are even some national topics. I think one of the questions on my sheet today is how to keep up educations on math and science now that the United States ranks like, whether you want to say 17th, 23rd, 32nd in the world, depending on which commercial that you watch. So write down the phone numbers, 979-0919 and 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We'll be taking calls a little later in the hour. All right, so I also need to take and let the folks in Lexington's 95.3 know that we appreciate them for listening today. And let's jump right in. Ladies, is education as respected a profession currently as maybe when you got started in this field? Dr. Moran, will you jump into that first?
Rick, I think that when I talk to people individually, parents in the community, taxpayers, senior citizens, I believe that individually I hear incredible respect and regard for the work that our educators are doing here in Albemarle County. It doesn't mean that we don't sometimes make mistakes, but I think that overall that people really see the hard work, the incredible commitment, the lifelong dedication of educators. I think that we have taken perhaps some hits at the national level, and I think that sometimes those are motivated to create and sensationalize stories around education. But the reality is that if you look at, for example, the Gallup poll, people across this country have great confidence in their schools and at the local levels, and everybody seems to really have a real sense of support and respect for their community schools.
So, Dr. Pettit, if we accept the fact that locally, because when you know somebody who's a teacher or know somebody who's a superintendent, you typically have more respect for that person rather than the title that you may see belongs to someone across the country or elsewhere in the state. Do you think that, I'm sure that when you go out and shake hands with people, especially after some of the issues that happened in Louisa with the earthquake, and we'll get into that a little later in the hour, do you agree that locally, yes, the respect is still there, but possibly diminished a little elsewhere in a little more general basis?
Yes, I definitely agree with Pam's ideas about that, and I've experienced it firsthand. I know that in Louisa especially, we're a close, tight-knit community. I've lived there all my life, so I know people very well. And as I interact with them, I know that our community sees education and the educators as their children's opportunity to make it in the world, so to speak. They, you know, they know that it's valuable, and they really appreciate the efforts put forth by all those in education, not just the classroom teachers, but in Louisa, probably in Albemarle as well. But Louisa, you know, our extracurricular activities are very important to families and to our students, and not just athletics, but also band, chorus, the arts, and so there is a high degree of regard for our educators and our programs. I think, again, things begin to be more vague as you become national, and so it's maybe easier to point fingers and say those schools aren't doing as well when you don't look into the eyes of the individuals.
Well, let's talk, bring it back home for a minute and talk about the two counties. Again, our guests today, Dr. Deborah Pettit from Louisa County, Dr. Pam Moran from Albemarle County, the supervisors from each. We have two, what I would consider, again, I have no children in either of these schools. I have no children in a school system. But many people would say that the counties are different, with different needs and different goals and different parents out there with expectations. I don't know if that is agreed between the two of you, but I would like to know, there are certainly differences between the counties. Dr. Pettit, can you toss out what you think are some differences?
Well, I think that certainly we are more rural than Albemarle, even though I know Albemarle has some rural areas. We have only one high school, one middle school, and four elementaries, so we're smaller in population. And I think when you have only one high school, that becomes a focal point for a community. I believe Pam has the three high schools. So, again, to serve a larger community. So I think those are different aspects of our two counties. Probably similar are, I guess, parents' desires for their children to get the best education. How they express those desires may differ from district to district, but to me, that's what's in the heart of every parent, sending them to school to get, you know, the best education possible to prepare them for life. And so I think that's a similarity. So, again, size, you know, and just the number of schools would dictate some of the differences. Pam may want to comment now. You know, I'm thinking, too, that we probably have some schools that share the in terms of needs, some with higher poverty than others. And in those schools, you know, we have particular challenges with helping children with, you know, with their learning needs as well as with many social and even personal needs.
Dr. Moran?
I would say that one of the things that I believe represents the common ground that parents and teachers and Deb would have in Louisa, similarly to where we are in Albemarle, is exactly what you said, Deb, about the idea that everyone wants our children to get the best education that we can offer them. I think our parents always see a hope out there that their children will perhaps rise to a different place in terms of the jobs that they hold or the kind of work that they do or who they are as family members and citizens. They always want better for their children than perhaps they've had for themselves. That just seems to be a drive that has been in place for as long as there have been parents. But I do think that there are differences between our systems. For example, we have 726 square miles in Albemarle County, which puts us into being one of the biggest geographic regions in the state. We have 2,400 employees, of which over 1,000 of those are educators that are directly in classrooms. We have 13,000 students in our schools, including our preschools. So we have a much larger footprint in terms of the educational system and budget. But one of the things that I'll say is that we have rural schools that probably look a lot like Louisa. We have schools that are suburban schools that probably look really different than Louisa. And we have urban ring schools that today look a lot more similar to what you might see in the Charlottesville City schools, where you have kids that perhaps are more transient, more high poverty in some of those schools. But one of the things I think that we would say is that it doesn't matter who the child is or where they go to school, that one of the things that we would both want is that all of our kids get the very best education that we can get, with great equity and parity of resources as well as experiences.
One of the things that doing my homework that I found, because, you know, I asked this question about difference, and there's, you know, a talk about, we also talk about similarities. But for many people, we aren't aware not just about the differences and the similarities, but is about how the school systems work together out of need or kindness. Now, we'll jump into the earthquake issue with some more distinct and direct questions in a little bit. But, Dr. Pettit, my understanding in a conversation with you is that when the gym was no longer available at Louisa, that Dr. Moran came to you and said, hey, we have a gym here you can use, correct?
That is correct. Actually, that was further down the road from her first offer, within the first week after the earthquake. And we were trying to get Thomas Jefferson School pulled together. It became a modular school on the hill up at Trevilians Elementary. But we were trying to wire it for technology, and Pam sent us several of her technology staff for about a week, because we were under a real time crunch to try to get back to school so we could, you know, get our clock hours in. And technology and wiring takes a long time. And she graciously offered her staff, and that was such a help. So then later, as we were realizing we weren't going to have a gym, then we used Monticello as our home. That was the home base for Louisa for our basketball season, and we're grateful to Pam for that.
Well, and I think that, Rick, to piggyback on that, one of the things that we I think as educators see ourselves as being is truly a family that extends beyond the boundaries of our schools or our school districts. And one of the things that I know is that if we were in a similar situation, that all of the superintendents around here, as I think many of them did with Deb, will step up and say, how can we resource you to help you out? I kind of see it as being akin to when we have a power outage, a major power outage, and all of a sudden you see crews showing up from all over the seaboard to help in Virginia. That I think that educators do the same thing, that we say, how can we help each other out?
11:14 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guests today, Dr. Deborah Pettit, superintendent of Louisa County Schools, Dr. Pam Moran from Albemarle County Schools. We're here at the support of Dixon Disposal. They are family-owned and operated for 40 years. Dixon Disposal works to promote green awareness. Dixon offers all-in-one can recycling, so you won't have to spend time sorting or trying to figure out if items are recyclable. These recyclable items will not end up in the landfill. For more info on the all-in-one can recycling, it's at DixonDisposal.com or call them 978-2111. All right, back to our show today, talking with two of our local school superintendents, Dr. Pam Moran and Dr. Deborah Pettit. It seems pretty simple to guess that what I would assume to be the biggest, most time-consuming topic to be budgeting. Am I wrong? Am I right?
Actually, I think budgeting is a year-round process for us. When I first became superintendent, I thought, okay, I'm going to start in earnest in October and begin to think about budgeting, and then, you know, maybe around January, we'll jump in, I guess, with both feet. Well, I've learned that as a superintendent, budget is on your mind all the time. Pam, would you agree?
Oh, I think that Deb, what we have seen emerge over the last 4 to 5 years has been an ever-increasing slice of our time being spent on budgeting because there have been so many factors that have been unable to predict as we go through the season and things that change, whether it's at the national level, the state level, or the local level in terms of the resourcing. But I think the other thing, too, is that we have become much more strategic focused as superintendents across the state and locally as a result of the fact that the economy has really caused us, like it has folks in the private sector as well as other levels of government, to have to really scrutinize every aspect of what we do all the time in terms of being sure that the resources that we're putting out there for our kids are being used to really affect our main mission, which is student learning.
How do you, as a superintendent, get together with the Board of Supervisors? Each of you have a Board of Supervisors, not a city council. Because I would think that there are, that while your focus is on almost entirely on the school systems, the needs, although there is effort and goals of doing it in the most efficient way possible, the Board of Supervisors, while certainly the school system is a part of their concern, also have other issues that are pulling at that. They have citizens who want to pay as small a tax rate as possible. There are other issues from roads to facilities outside of the school system. How do you follow a polite and meaningful conversation with members of the Board of Supervisors to get what you feel is needed?
Well, I'll jump in on that. What's become very effective for us is that we have a two-on-two team, two supervisors and two school board members who meet periodically year-round. It's an ongoing exchange. During budget season, it's heavily on budget. For us in the last year, it's been on earthquake matters and so forth. But having that team of four and the county administrator and myself involved in those meetings gives us a chance for dialogue, to lay out issues, thoughts, ideas, project what's upcoming. And that's helped us in terms of understanding each other. And so I think that's one method that we have found has worked very well for us as we're working through that budget process. Then we also have more formal meetings when, you know, both boards meet jointly. But we found that those more informal meetings have really benefited us.
Are there polite battles?
There are.
Impolite battles?
Well, there have been impolite battles, but I found in these meetings, especially these two-on-two, in the last two or three years we've done this, they'll agree to disagree. But, you know, they don't end in fistfights or anything like that, but say, you know, this is our priority. This is the way it is. We have certain programs that we have to fund. This would be the school board, you know, speaking to the supervisors. Supervisors will come back with, well, you know, our tax base is down, our what we're receiving in taxes is down. We all have to work together. And we really have done that. As Pam mentioned earlier, we've had to scrutinize every aspect of our operations. We've done that, and we've pared down. And so I think we have a very streamlined operation, and currently our supervisors seem to appreciate that. So that has that's been good for us in terms of a working relationship.
All right, 11:20 here on the wake-up call with our guest, Dr. Deborah Pettit from Louisa County, Dr. Pam Moran, the Albemarle County. Dr. Moran, I'm going to follow up that question with you in just a moment on the battles between the superintendent and the Board of Supervisors. But let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel weather forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's partly sunny with some winds today, small chance of showers, highs in the lower 90s. Mostly cloudy with a 70% chance of showers tonight, lows 70 to 75. And then tomorrow, sunny, 50% chance of showers, highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's a nice day outside, 83 in the valley, 76 in Lynchburg, 84 in Richmond, and 80 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Market for Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support for WNRN today also comes from your Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield authorized agent, Herb Bennett. As your local agent in Central Virginia, Herb provides expert knowledge and personal service in designing your individual health insurance plan. Your health is worth protecting, and you shouldn't let it go uninsured. For a quote, you can give Agent Herb Bennett a call. It's 855-425-0090, or you can visit agentherb.com. All right, we'll open the phone lines in just a moment. Go ahead and write down the number. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN rocks. Dr. Moran, we were talking about the easy word to choose is battle, but the conversations between the superintendents representing the schools on an almost 100% side versus the Board of Supervisors, who have a lot of different people and topics to cover. How do you get as much as you can in those conversations?
Well, I think that Rick, and we have some very similar structures to what Deb described in Louisa. One of the things that I believe is that we are both about making sure that we're educating each other about the challenges that we have. And that starts with that Tom Foley, our county executive, and I, with our two sets of cabinet staff, meet routinely, at least once a month, if not more often, to really talk about the kinds of things that are challenging both the local government side of budgeting and for the services provided to Albemarle County residents and citizens, as well as in the schools. And so we exchange a lot of information. We talk through issues at that level. And then we both attempt to really educate both of our boards about the common challenges that are being faced out there around making sure that we're providing the best quality services across the whole county for all of the citizens of Albemarle County. We also have our vice chair and chair from the school board and the Board of Supervisors, who meet periodically through the year, and they also are doing the same thing Deb described, which is informally talking and sharing in regards to issues that we see as ones that we both need to be considering. I think that consideration is probably one of the most critical words in there, and that is because if we are not on the school side aware of and sensitive to the issues that local government is facing and the Board of Supervisors are facing in the decisions they have to make and vice versa, it's hard to really be able to understand how a pie that is much smaller in terms of where it was a few years ago is going to be shared and strategically driven towards the things that we need for the citizens of Albemarle County.
But how do you, and Dr. Pettit, this applies to both of you, how does a school superintendent recognize or how do you meet the demands of a parent and a non-parent at the same time?
Well, go ahead.
Well, you can either, Pam. I think that we, education is an important commodity, if you want to call it that, I think, in a community. And so, of course, the parents' demands are for education. We have a lot of, I guess, generations still living in Louisa County. So those grandparents they have grandchildren in school now. And so, we're meeting, their demands as well. Our population who lives on Lake Anna, that's another interesting population. But we find that they are very supportive of schools. Some of them live there part-time, but others who live there permanently volunteer in our schools. And they're very positive toward education. No one wants to have increased taxes. Like, everyone is looking for us to be very frugal. But, we try to show that our educational program is working well and serving the community.
Well, and it's, in my mind, a little bit of it is about return on investment. We meet regularly with on an annual basis with the local Realtors Association. One of the things that I learned from the Realtors is how important our schools, the quality of our schools are, for them to be able to sell and resell property. And they talk about that when people come in, even people who are retirees who don't have children in school, they've never lived in Albemarle County, They want to know that the school near their home is one that's of quality, because they know that quality schools give them better bang for the bucks in terms of overall property value over time. We also work with our business community around those kinds of things. The University of Virginia, Leonard Sandridge over there, said to our board very publicly within the last year that the University of Virginia sees the quality of Albemarle County Public Schools and the investments that we make in our schools as being absolutely critical to them being able to attract and retain top quality professors, whether it's in the medical school, the law school, or arts and sciences. So one of the things we've tried to do is to really reach out to our business community, but also to really educate our greater community about the value, the return on investment that we get from schools. It's the senior citizen who walks into a doctor's office and has a great CNA who's working in there that was educated at K-Tech, perhaps, that's able to provide really quality medical services. It's about the kids that we have working anywhere in the county, that we need to be able to have our kids be the kinds of kids who can go out into the workforce and provide good services to citizens everywhere. And that's something that we're always talking about, is how do we make sure that our kids are really ready with the skills they need to go into the workforce. And when they aren't, we hear about it.
I you know, doing my homework for today's program, a little research, and I ran across several studies, and we all know the statistics, you have to take them lightly in some cases, but in several different researches, research tests, I saw, and I picked the number, sort of the median, 39% of parents would like to send kids, their kids, to private school, but only 9% do. As public school superintendents, what's your reply to that situation?
Well, I think that we always want to be the to have the schools of choice in Albemarle County for our parents, that we want to be seen as equally and better in terms of the programs that we offer in comparison to any other options that parents have. But parents make choices for different reasons. Some of them are looking for settings that perhaps have what I call some of those specialty perspectives that some of our private schools do. One of the things that we've really done is to go into providing more customized options in Albemarle over the last few years, because we see that as part of helping us maintain a competitive advantage. Opening the Mesa Academy at Albemarle High School, the new Health and Medical Sciences Academy that's going to open at Monticello, Murray High School, the middle school community charter that's placed at Burley, being able to roll out programs like Avid and others that really provide kids with different options, we think help make us competitive and give parents choices, which is what I think private schools offer, are choices. And so we need to do the same.
Dr. Pettit, is this even something that is necessary for thought process in Louisa County? We talked earlier about the difference between Albemarle and Louisa. Does this fall into that category about unnecessary?
I don't think it's unnecessary, because we probably geographically we have fewer options for parents to just send their kids to a private school if they even made that choice.
Right, the bus isn't going to come pick them up.
No, they're not. And but we realize, too, that it's so important to offer options for our students, especially since we're the only game in town, or one of the only. So, you know, we're a part of the Blue Ridge Virtual Governor School, and a number of our students also participate in taking college-level courses through high school, so we can offer those kind of opportunities for our students. I would say in Louisa that probably there are more students, rather than going to private school, there are homeschool. Parents choose the homeschool option. Probably 100 or so students are homeschooled in Louisa. So, again, that happens to be those parents' choices. And again, we try to offer every opportunity we can for children, but, you know, parents have to make those choices on their own.
It's 11:30 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest, Dr. Deborah Pettit. She's the superintendent at the Louisa County School System. Dr. Pam Moran, also with us from Albemarle County. Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. With the school year on its way, it's Blue Ridge for book bags from the North Face, Patagonia, and Mountain Hardware. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Berks Road in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond. For more information online, it's brms.com. Dr. Pettit, real quick, because it popped into my mind, Blue Ridge Mountain Sports talking about one-stop source for back-to-school. You're doing something when you leave here today that's important for back-to-school.
It is. Zion Crossroads Walmart is sponsoring a Stuff the Bus program this weekend for schools. It's a school supply drive for Louisa County Schools. We're grateful to them. Our Louisa Education Foundation is overseeing all of this. And so I'm going to go by and thank people and probably make a donation of my own.
I should find you a WNRN T-shirt that you can put on while you're there. Hey, Angie, check and see if you can find a WNRN T-shirt out there for Dr. Pettit to wear at the Stuff the Bus program. Let me take a moment, and we'll talk about the earthquake for a few moments, because the Stuff the Bus sounds like something that is community-driven to help support people who are in need. Am I correct with
correct.
That? That's what that's for. And so it's the community coming together to help with a problem. And that's really what the earthquake and the aftermath was so dependent on, correct?
That is correct. I can't say enough about how proud I am of Louisa County. It is my hometown as well, so naturally I'm proud. But following the earthquake, the way the whole community came together, not just the school system, but our parents to support us in what we had to do to have a school year last year. And I think now when I reflect on it, I say that maybe the middle school parents had it the toughest, because their students went to school Tuesday, Thursday, and every other Saturday, and they had to figure out what to do with those 6th, 7th, and 8th graders on those off days. The high schoolers went on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I still hear from them that sometimes they'd like to keep that schedule. Of course, it was a 9-hour day. Let's not forget that. So they went to school from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., but we were able to get in our entire school year. So it was not just, though, school and parents, the business community, and then the community at large in the whole state. We've received support, donations, and we continue to. Recently, I went to a church over in Harrisonburg, and their Bible school project was for earthquake relief for Louisa. And to date, they have sent us $1,500, and this is a tiny little church. I'm telling you that there are some wonderful, generous people out there who enabled us to be able to have a school year last year.
And reading about this, I don't know if you knew about it, that the article made it sound like you sort of discovered this in the quick aftermath, is that one of your higher-up administrators had a background in emergency situations?
Well, he did. Actually, it was our county administrator. That's what his background was. And so after the earthquake, we didn't have school or any employees report for 2 days. I just brought in my administrators, and Robert DuBay, our county administrator, met with us. And that's when we came up with this crazy idea of the every other day school and how we were going to have school in the fall. But he also gave us a plan, an organizational chart for how to deal with emergencies, and that served us well. That team of people met morning and afternoon for the first month, and then we met daily and then weekly. But it's how emergency teams function so that you aren't duplicating services. And it did take that kind of organization for us just to get through the logistics of trying to restart school after losing two of our schools. We lost space for 40% of our students, and that was daunting to not have a place to send them to school.
Dr. Moran, so 40% of the schools Can you sort of give the local listeners, the Charlottesville Albemarle folks who may not be able to put that in their head, what schools you would have to lose to have a similar crisis?
Well, if you think about just 40% of our kids, you're talking about, with 13,000 kids, you're going to be talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 6,000 kids that we would be.
So which schools would, yeah. which pick yeah. pick a handful of schools that, and I don't expect you to get it right on, but an example.
Well,
of,
just imagine that if we had six schools similarly to you,
right.
because we have 26, but if we were to have to deploy one of our high schools, now how many kids do you have in Louisa High School?
1,500.
1,500. So that's not too far off the size of Albemarle High School. That if we had to deploy Albemarle High School out, and let's say that we had one of our, it was your elementary school. And how many were there?
550.
550. So that's not too far off the size of, Cale Elementary, which mm-hmm. is in the 600 range. So if we had to take those two schools and figure out using no more high schools, how to deploy those kids, that would be a significant challenge for us. And I know it was for you because you had to literally build a modular school during the school year.
We did. We built two modular schools actually during the year. For the elementary school, we were able to pull that together in about 6 weeks. And in the interim, we had students doubled up at Trevilians Elementary. So there literally were 40 students in a classroom with two teachers, you know, just so that we could have school. But the attitudes of everyone were, you know, it was can do, it was positive, mm-hmm. and we were going to make it happen. But it's daunting when you think about losing a high school for especially for all the programs.
It wasn't just the schools, though. I mean, you had all these students who had lost their homes or were at least unable to live in their homes during this time period. They were all displaced.
Well, many. And I don't even know the number of how many. Some of our teachers as well, their homes were damaged to the point that they had to live in another location. So that was hard. That's where I'm amazed at how resilient our staff was, because I knew that they had a mess at home. If they didn't have a broken house, they had, you know, broken dishes and things like that. And they were able to come back and literally cheer when we gave them the school plan. And then the first day we were back in those, after 3 weeks, everybody had smiles on their faces, and they got it done. Because I will say that our test scores did not suffer, if you want to use them as a measure. You know, we don't have everything back in detail, but from the looks of it, we didn't really miss a beat there.
Well, and I think that, Deb, one of the things that there's a lesson learned there is that we sometimes really hold on to the status quo in our schools and think, oh, my gosh, if we change this or change that, the whole world's going to come to an end. And then you have a situation such as you dealt with, and you find that resilience, that persistence, that sense of we can do, that the kids come out on the other end, and perhaps in some ways this experience is going to strengthen them as they become adults, more so than to have caused them to have hit some bumps in the road that knocked them off course.
Oh, I agree. And I know that our seniors, after they got over saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to be able to graduate from our high school building, our seniors said, you know, they used for their essays for college applications, they used the experience of the earthquake and coming through. And it's just amazing the way that many of our students and teachers have turned this into a positive experience, even a learning yeah. experience.
One of your parents shared with me a story at some point that her child was actually being tutored on an off day in what I think sounded like a private business, that there were people that offered up spaces for kids to work. fire stations and things like
they
that.
They did. We had tutoring, especially for the middle schoolers, in one was at the Best Western in at Science Crossroads was a location, because we had to find locations around the county that would be accessible. Fire departments around the counties, our local Parks and Rec just won an award for they had a program called Teen Quest, and the middle school students on their off days could ride the bus and go to Teen Quest at the Parks and Rec Center, where our middle school teachers would help to supervise them. And we moved a computer lab over there. So that was another place for tutorials. And again, for some students, some who were taking algebra in middle school and kind of having a rough time with it, said that made all the difference to have that tutorial time.
11:41 here on the wake-up call. Our guests, Dr. Deborah Pettit from Louisa County Superintendent, Dr. Pam Moran, Superintendent at Albemarle County.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Market Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on newsstands Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, and this week it's the annual manual, the lowdown on our area for newcomers and townies alike. The where to walk your dog, the where to take your trash, which celebrities to look for, but not bother, and how to get involved in various groups and clubs. The annual manual also includes helpful information on real estate, restaurants, schools, and more. The Hook. This week's issue is good for the whole year. And a big thank you to Blue Ridge Graphics for their support of WNRN. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. And brgtshirts.com. All right, back to our guests, superintendents, Dr. Pam Moran and Dr. Deborah Pettit from Albemarle and Louisa County. Ladies, let's jump into something that I always get asked, which is, how do you deal with the United States having fallen so much and our test scores of science and math? Is there anything that you can do locally that you say, this is what we're doing, or this is what we should do as a country?
Well, I will tell you that Rick, I've really spent some deep time studying some of the international data that's put out there, again, by the national media, and used oftentimes to say, isn't it awful how terrible we're doing in the United States? One of the things that I want to do, though, is I do want to clarify something that's a fact, that if you take students in the United States and you band them by their poverty level or lack of poverty and compare them to the cohorts that are sometimes ranked at the top, whether it's Finland or Singapore or recently China, one of the cities in China was actually ranked, not China in general. One of the things that happens is that you see a very different story. The reality is that our kids that have similar poverty levels perform at the same level as those top countries. So the United States actually, if we were looking at Finland in terms of its poverty level compared to our kids that have similar poverty levels, we would be ranked above them.
So it's not consistent pairing of scores?
Absolutely not. That what you see is an averaging of data in the United States that comes from kids that are in urban high poverty schools, from kids that are in less poverty schools, and then that's lumped together to create a United States score. Finland in general has an extremely low poverty rate. The United States has a significantly higher poverty rate than Finland. So that's an interesting piece. The other thing I ran across recently that I thought was fascinating is there's a professor at the University of Oregon by the name of Yang Zhao. And Yang Zhao was educated in Chinese schools, highly educated there, brilliant man. And he is absolutely one of those folks that sings the praises of the United States in terms of our educational system. He just recently did a research study and looked at the entrepreneurial capacity of nations and compared it to their scores on PISA exams. And what he found is that the higher the scores that kids post on tests, the lower the entrepreneurial capacity of that nation. He says, the kids in the United States have never been good test takers. Our data has been bad for a long time. But he says, we create schools that allow genius to emerge. He says, China will never create kids that are like Stephen Jobs. And that's because they are so focused on testing as compared to really building out kids that have some creative genius about them.
Dr. Pettit, does this sort of... Does a lot of this advertising, commercials that sort of point at these from positive or negative facets, does that have to do with the fact that it's an election time period now? It's never an election year. It always seems to be, it's an always an election year. It's just who's trying to be elected at the time.
Well, I think it probably could be, but... You know, what I've tried to do is focus on offering, when you think about math and science, every opportunity we can for our students to have, you know, to learn about, I guess, all of the options out there for them that probably haven't even been created yet in math and science. And I mentioned earlier that we're part of the Virtual Governor School, Blue Ridge Virtual Governor School. Some of us smaller school divisions have banded together in that. We also try to offer higher level science and math courses, even if it be through the community college, so that our students have, you know, have an exposure to to math and science that could then eventually maybe be a job for them, or indeed that they may be that entrepreneur or that person who discovers something that we haven't even considered yet.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that we have to always be really focused on is we have a workforce that's changing radically in this country. That we are not a country of factories anymore, of manufacturing, that we are an economy that really is based upon almost the knowledge of how we become more inventive and create versus just manufacture and reproduce. And so one of the things that I think we have to think about is what kind of opportunities, how do we change up curriculum so that our kids are really working in areas that strengthen the skill sets they will need for a workforce that's actually, we're well into the 21st century now.
Well, that's one of the things I believe, Dr. Pettit, you said much earlier when we were talking about, when I asked the question about respect for the school system and for those involved in the school system, and you said best education for life. I quoted that. I think you were talking about the parents and the grandparents, because in Louisa you still have that family grouping. And has life changed so that there are different needs for the schools from what the parents got and what the grandparents got? Are there, the respect may be there, but the expectations are needed to be so different?
Well, they do need to be different, but being a grandparent myself, I realize that if you're going to interact at all with your grandchild, you're going to see that life is different for them. You know, their toys are even different. You know, they play with Legos that then are connected, you know, to you make a robot with those, you know, and they read from a Kindle. And so as a grandparent, you realize life is different for them. And so their learning experiences are going to have to be different as well.
And no matter where they go to work, whether it's at the Walmart distribution center that you're so close to, is near
right.
and dear to you, or whether it is the Radio Astronomy Observatory offices that are based here in Charlottesville, our kids are using tools and they're using knowledge that is so much different and extended beyond where we were 30 years ago or 20 years ago when we were young educators in the system.
Well, let me ask real quick.
I think we have to make those changes.
Let me ask about the testing, because the testing is asked to be part of the changing. I believe, you know, most parents or non-parents are familiar with the SOLs, Standards of Learning Test. And my understanding is there's going to be a new set of assessments, the Common Core Standards. Correct?
That is correct in most states, but not in Virginia. Virginia has not affiliated with a Common Core, although we have aligned our standards with the Common Core. We are not participating in the Common Core assessments per se. But Virginia is doing some change-ups in its assessments, but we still have some work to do in that area, I think. Because I think that you would find that across the state, most superintendents, and certainly I believe that we have created what looks more like a test prep curriculum in many of our schools because people are so focused on the test. We do need to be focused on lifelong learning competencies. We want our kids to go well beyond being able to pass just those tests.
Is a, what did I hear, a three-hour or four-hour math test for an eighth grader, is that all part of this that should be accepted?
Well,
it's not just eighth graders, right,
yes,
Deb?
Yes, I think we even had some third graders who spent that long on this on the new assessment. And
is that provided by the state?
Yes, that is. That was the new state math assessment for this year. And so part of it, I think, that students had not acclimated to was the format of it, and it involved multiple steps. They also had to do more interaction, I guess, online with graphs and charts and things like that. So it took students longer to do it. And in a way, that speaks to the diligence and dedication, perseverance of our students, and how we have drilled into them, you must do well on this test. And that can be concerning to us as well. So I think more familiarity, more practice with assessments like that. We, the assessment is one thing. We have to teach that way. Our students have to learn to think that way in order to perform on an assessment that way. And that's a challenge for us, helping our teachers to, I guess, make the balance between learning lots of facts and content and then learning how to think and how to learn and how to manipulate information. And that we continue to work with that with our staff. I'm sure Pam does as well.
Absolutely. And I think that many of us as superintendents have been very clear with the state that there needs to be some revisions, that it's pretty unconscionable to have an 8-year-old who would even feel compelled to spend 3 hours or more on one test out of their school day. But at the same time, one of the things I think that we really like is the idea that we could be moving towards assessments that are more open-ended, that are more problem-solving oriented in math, because we do believe that those are the things our kids need to learn more so than here's four choices, pick one right answer.
I'd like to see a graph that shows the score of the test as the hours go by and see what percentage of correct answers are given after like 2.5 hours until the end. We are talking today with Dr. Pam Moran and Dr. Deborah Pettit, superintendents of Louisa County and Albemarle County. Let me thank L. Oppelman's for their support today. Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department now featuring acoustic guitars and banjos, mandolins and violins, as well as electric guitar packages and complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. And it's 11:53. Don't go anywhere because Les Temps Perdue is here at noon. The best of 80s and 90s alternative music. You'll hear the roots of alternative because you can't understand where we're going without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip back to the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue only on WNRN. And this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. A few minutes left with our guests today. Ladies, a topic that seems to always come up, sort of my background, master's degree program, balancing different family beliefs in the classroom. Dr. Moran, I think it was a year or 2 years ago where Albemarle chose to take a Sherlock Holmes book out of, I believe it was sixth grade classroom, not out of the school system, not out of the library, but out of that age group. I think it was this past year where Greene County took also had an issue with parents writing in because they didn't want a particular book being read by their child. I don't know, I think it was Fluvanna County in the past year or two that chose to teach abstinence-only sex ed class. How do you balance this with such an Albemarle, a disparate type of parent, and Louisa representing, I guess, a more rural group versus where there are much more urban settings elsewhere in the state, and yet the state sets rules for everyone? Dr. Pettit, start.
Well, I'm, you know, thinking about, for instance, with the family life curriculum, we can go with that. We do have a very conservative, community. And so what we have offered in the curriculum is aligned with what the state recommends, but also give parents a chance to opt their children out. I will say that very few do, but they do have that opportunity. And so that's how we balance that. And on other issues, it's usually on a case-by-case kind of issue. And I will say in the last few years, really haven't had any particular book issues arise, but they have from time to time, and we have dealt with that either in terms of giving, I remember one was in a, I think it was in one of our governor's school programs, and the parent had a concern with language in a book, but we they were fine with offering the student an alternative book to read. So again, if we, you know, if something comes up, we're going to, I think, just have to take it case by case. We probably have, again, more generally conservative community than Pam. You probably have the gamut.
We do. And I would say that one of the things that we think is really important is that our teachers are really sensitive to what it means to provide choice for kids whenever possible, so that you do have options for parents that have perhaps different belief systems. We don't get many challenges. We have over 30 years have a handful. One of the things that I think is also pretty critical is that any time that we go through a process of looking at something that's challenged, such as a book, that we really try to bring together a committee that is a committee that represents different voices from our parents as well as from our staff community, and they make a recommendation forward to us as to what to do with that particular challenge, which is what happened with that particular book. One of the things that I think, though, is that in this day and age that we have an incredible diversity of perspectives across the United States, across the state, and even in our local community. We have to be sensitive to that. We have to hear voices. Most importantly, we have to build relationships with people so that they feel like that they have a great working relationship with us. They can bring issues forward to us when they have concerns, and that we work together to resolve them, and that we keep it to the greatest degree possible embedded in the school community that's been affected by that. So, you know, I think I've seen our principals do a wonderful job with that, and really appreciate that we've been able to have really great working relationships with parents in many cases that haven't risen out of the school when there's been an issue that a parent really feels strongly about.
All right, running out of time with our guest today on WNRN's Wake Up Call, our guest Dr. Pam Moran, Dr. Deborah Pettit. I think I read in the paper where the governor of Virginia says that for the third year in a row, looks like the state will have a budget surplus. Is there an effort by the superintendents to go to the governor's office and say, thank you for doing that, now give us the money that has been cut out of our budgets for 3 years?
Well, I certainly, as a former president just this past year of the Virginia Association of School Superintendents, know that we as an organization believe that the state government needs to own its fair share per actually state code of the resources that need to go to our local school systems. We have seen an erosion of state support for schools that has shifted the burden of responsibility to our local communities. And one of the things that we're finding is that as the local share goes up, it really is placing a burden on our local taxpayers to be able to own the responsibility of local schools, and the state to take less responsibility, even though we have a commitment both legally as well as in practice from the state of funding our schools at an adequate level. So we think that yes, indeed, that there should be some look at that.
All right. That's going to finish it up. It is noon. Again, our guest, Dr. Deborah Pettit. Dr. Pettit, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it.
Hopefully we didn't scare you so much you'll come back.
You didn't. I'll be happy to come back.
And your husband, I hope you guys have a great birthday party, being here on his birthday. And you'll be at the Zion's Walmart, right?
I will be.
And Louisa, folks, you'll go down there for the Stuff the Bus program.
That's correct.
Dr. Moran, thanks again.
Rick, as always, a delight.
Well, thank you so much. Say that louder next time so people in Lexington can hear you, too. All right. We'll see you next week. Next week, we'll have three attorneys on the program. Call in and ask your free legal question. Bye.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, the wake-up call is also supported by the Marcus of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up.